Welcome to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes. You're listening to Alternative Talk 1150 AM. The Dog Show is brought to you in part by Invisible Fence Northwest. Invisible Fence for the life of your pet. Find them online at InvisibleFenceNW.com. The Dog Show is also brought to you in part by all the best pet care, all the best food, treats, and toys for your dog and cat. Find them online at AllTheBestPetCare.com to see where all of their 9 locations are around Western Washington. And last but not least, The Dog Show is brought to you in part by The Natural Pet Pantry. Raw and cooked stews for your dog and cat. Locally made here in Burien, Washington, naturalpetpantry.com. Both available in retail stores and free home delivery. We got a good one today, Eric.
All right.
I'd say that every week, but this one's a doozy. We've got Dr. Gene Dodds back with us on the show today. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Dodds.
Hello.
Hi. So
I'm here.
Excellent. So I had you on the first time, and I have actually since run that first interview that we did a few times because I believe it's one of the most important topics that I've talked about on the show, which was about rabies vaccinosis and your work with the Rabies Challenge Fund. And you can find out more information at rabieschallengefund.org. And I have Dr. Dodds' website links posted on our homepage as well, which is dogradioshow.com. That was episode 109 back in March of 2011. We're over 180 now episodes, and Dr. Dodds is back with us talking about your book that you co-authored called The Canine Thyroid Epidemic, Answers You Need for Your Dog. And this is, I think, a must listen for anybody with a dog or anybody who works with dogs, you know, anybody in the dog world at all. This is an important one because as you use the word epidemic, Dr. Dodds, this is a very big and very important topic for people to get educated on. And unfortunately, which we'll talk about a little bit later in the interview, unfortunately, this is not something that we can generally rely on our vets to know about to this degree. And so we'll talk a little bit more about that detail. And just when I get through this book, which is just loaded with information, and then you tell me you have another book coming out next year, which I'm thrilled about, but that'll be another, I feel like I'm going back to school when I'm getting ready for an interview with you. So we're talking about the thyroid gland and hypothyroidism, which is a deficiency or a underactive thyroid gland, and what the impact that has on the body. And you have done work and you have developed a test to test the thyroid function in a way that hasn't been tested and interpreted, that hasn't been tested to date. And so, first off, Dr. Dodds, will you tell us about what is the thyroid gland and what does it do in the body?
Well, the thyroid gland is what we call a major master gland in humans and animals, humans being a special form of animal. And it gets its messages from the pituitary gland in the head, which is the master gland. So there are actually two master glands with a third partial master gland. So the thyroid is the second master gland, and the third one is the hypothalamus. The three glands work together in a feedback way where they get messages from each other and they decide what the body's going to do. The hypothalamus works more with the adrenal gland and sex hormones, whereas the pituitary and thyroid, of course, work on the metabolism of all tissues in the body. So the thyroid gland is told by the pituitary gland to either buck up or slow down. And in doing so, the thyroid gland will then regulate everything, the functions of organs, the functions of your food and, you know, metabolism, the functions of your enzymes, the functions of your nerves, the functions of every single thing, even at the molecular level in the body, is controlled by the pituitary thyroid axis, we call it.
Mm-hmm. And will you define, I think when people hear metabolism, we think like, oh, how many calories am I burning? When you say on a cellular level and the metabolism of all tissues, What do you mean by metabolism?
We're talking about the intake and exhale of just functions, enzyme functions, nutritional energy. All cells require energy, and to do that, they need, quote, food or fuel. And that fuel comes into the body through a variety of mechanisms, including what we eat, and it then goes down through organs into tissues, into cells within the tissue, and they're fed. And when those cells are fed, they work the way they're intended to.
It's like putting your foot on the gas versus
taking it off. That's
exactly
right, or slowing down.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. So fascinating. I mean, it blows my mind every time I talk about physiology and then especially the endocrine system. I mean, it's the hormones are the intelligence of the body, I've heard. They're the
Correct.
Endocrine system, mm-hmm. Okay, so the thyroid and the pituitary together regulate metabolism of all tissues.
Right.
And so hypothyroid is an underactive hypo as opposed to hyper, which would be overactive. And hyperthyroidism is not terribly common in dogs.
It's very unusual. It occurs with overdosing thyroid medication or with a thyroid tumor, which doesn't have to be cancer. It can be just an overactively growing thyroid gland, whereas in the cat, the opposite is true.
Huh.
Older cats get hyperthyroidism, rarely become hypothyroid. So it just happens to be that the cat and the dog, if you lump them together, become a person, because people get both.
People get both. Lucky us. okay, so what is happening? So it's an underactive gland, so it's that it's not producing enough thyroid hormone?
Correct.
Okay.
90% of the primary hypothyroidism in dogs is caused by a heritable autoimmune disease called autoimmune thyroiditis. It's also called Hashimoto's disease in humans after the first occurrence. In Japan, it was most widely recognized in Japan after we did what we did to Japan. Or it's called lymphocytic thyroiditis, which means that special white blood cells, special lymphocytes within the white blood cells of the body are targeted to destroy the thyroid gland. And the targeting of the thyroid gland is based on the genetics of the individual animal or person.
Mm-hmm. So this 90% of hypothyroidism is caused by autoimmune thyroiditis, which is actually genetic.
It's a heritable trait, absolutely.
Okay.
So obviously we don't want to breed animals that have that. And it's not only purebreds. It can be hybrid breeds, for example, where two different breed lines come to the table. Or it can even be in mixed breeds, depending on what the mix is. The other 10% is what we call idiopathic, which I laugh and say is idiot pathology. We don't know what's causing it. Thyroid atrophy being the shrinking of the gland. And there's lots of things that can do that. In people, they say that idiopathic thyroid atrophy is just the more progressive stage of thyroiditis. But you could have theoretically some environmental or toxic or even marked nutritional imbalances that could cause an idiopathic hypothyroidism. For example, selenium deficiency.
Okay. So the thyroid is underactive and it produces an insufficient amount of the thyroid hormone. And now there's the T4 and T3, and the body converts T4 into T3?
The body removes one iodine from T4 means four iodines, T3 is three. When you take away an iodine with an enzyme called thyroid peroxidase, which, by the way, can be blocked by soy, that T3 goes into cells. But that's not important. Those are the reserves of the hormone. The only hormone that has biological activity is the free, we say not no charge, but unbound form of T4, which makes up 0.1% of the total. So when you're measuring the total T4 in a test, which is what most veterinarians have been trained to do, you're not telling anything about how functional that thyroid is. You're just telling how much reserve there is in the face of a need. Same thing with T3. The free T3, again, is a tiny fraction of the total. And the free unbound hormones, the free T3 and free T4, circulate in the blood, tell the pituitary gland's sensor, it has a sensor in it, to stimulate or not stimulate the thyroid gland to make more or make less thyroid. The critically important thing is that the hormone you measure but you can't tell how much of it's active is bound to proteins, bound to albumin, the protein in the blood, bound to prealbumin, bound to thyroid-binding proteins. And this can be displaced from the binding by certain drugs and chemicals. So there's lots of interactions that happen here that make it very complicated.
Okay. So there's T4 and T3, and that's the number of iodine molecules?
Correct.
Okay. And then there's free T4 and free T3.
And
what makes them free?
They're not bound to any protein.
Not bound to protein. And those
right.
are actually...
It's not free, no charge, truly.
Right. Well, they're all no charge, right? But the...
I meant no charge as in paying for it.
Right, I know. The free...
Unbound. Mm-hmm.
Right. Unbound T4 and T3 are actually the ones that are communicating with the pituitary gland.
Right, and they're ones that are biologically important. So when we're doing assays for thyroid function, it's critical that the free hormones be measured, not just the total.
Got it. Now, what has a T4 or T3 be bound? Actually, we're going to... So here's my question for the next break. And then we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with Dr. Jean Dodds talking about her book, The Canine Thyroid Epidemic. Dr. Dodds, when we come back from break, I'd like to know what has the T4 and T3 either be bound or not bound? What controls that? We'll be back in just a few minutes. You're listening to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes on Alternative Talk 1150. Natural Pet Pantry is Seattle's original source for wholesome dog and cat meals, offering 8 different proteins to accommodate your pet's dietary needs. Made locally using all U.S.-sourced ingredients, their freshly ground stews, raw or cooked, can be purchased from their Burien shop, most independent pet supply stores, or delivered right to your home. Natural Pet Pantry will even work with your vet to custom blend a prescription diet for your pet's unique needs. Go to naturalpetpantry.com for more information. Natural Pet Pantry. It just makes sense.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to Cornerstone Home Lending, we cover the world of living successfully with your animal friends. This week, September 2nd, it's Behavior Training and Healing Sunday with me. We'll start with any follow-up, animals in the news, and review animal TV. We'll have open phone lines throughout the show so I can answer your behavior training or healing questions. So plan to give me a call if you need help with your animal friends. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
For home repair, remodel, and construction advice, ideas, and stories every Saturday at 10 a.m., tune in to Constructing Whatever. With over 40 years of combined experience, hosts Tim and Lynn talk about whatever. From important need-to-know topics to fielding your questions from the latest industry news to humorous stories from the job site. Start your weekend project day with us on Constructing Whatever.
This week, staycation. It's all I've ever wanted. Saturday at 10 a.m.
Do you have an injury, old or new, that won't heal? Are you fighting a cold or illness you can't kick? Do you feel like you've tried everything and are still struggling to find wellness and balance in your physical health? Have you been unimpressed with acupuncture in the past? For over a decade, Robert Meduzia has been making a difference for people who thought they had exhausted their options. Don't settle for pain and illness. Call 425-828-6190. That's 425-828-6190. Again, 425-828-6190. The Acupuncture and Sports Clinic of Kirkland. Heal faster, play longer.
Hi, this is Julie Forbes, your host of The Dog Show and owner of Sensitive Dog, Dog Training and Behavior. Invisible Fence Northwest uses a balanced, gentle approach to help dogs learn their boundaries. I've seen it firsthand. They work with each person and pet as an individual and teach in a way that is fun and respectful. Your dog quickly learns it has freedom and fair boundaries, so is safe, happy, and secure. Isn't that what we all want for our dogs? Save $100 when you visit InvisibleFenceNW.com or call 800-800-FENCE and tell them you are a Dog Show fan. They're there for the life of your pet.
Want to hear something different from talk radio? The choice is clear. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Dog Show!
Big dogs!
Little dogs! Fluffy dogs and Irish dogs!
We're back with the dog show with Julie Forbes. Eric Ryder is our booth engineer and program coordinator here at KKNW. And Eric has a knack of finding some dog-related song that's related to the topic. I don't suppose you could find a song about the thyroid gland and at all.
This may be the greatest challenge.
Not
I've
even
ever
dog
faced.
Related. If you can find a song about thyroid anything, I'll get you some salmon treats for your cats.
Okay. Well, right. I'll accept that challenge. I'm not sure I can come through on
right.
this particular one.
Fair enough.
I will try.
Okay. We're back with Dr. Jean Dodds talking about her book, The Canine Thyroid Epidemic. And before the break, I asked Dr. Dodds, we were talking about T4 versus T3 and free T4 versus free T3. And if you've missed any part of this show or any of our past over 180 episodes, you can find them all archived online, both on our website, dogradioshow.com, and you can also download us as a free audio podcast on iTunes. And you can also go back and find my first interview with Dr. Dodds, which was back in March of 2011. So if you're looking on the website, you'd want to scroll down to that date. You can find it also, especially on iTunes, under episode number 109. And that was my interview with Dr. Dodds talking about rabies vaccinosis. So my question, Dr. Dodds, is, so we've got the free T4 and the free T3, and those are the ones that are actually able to do their job, so to speak, in the body, or have, you know, able to communicate. So what has them be free?
Okay, well, they're free because they're not bound to the proteins that we described, thyroid binding proteins or albumin or prealbumin. And the body determines how much is going to be bound and how much is going to be free based on whether other things are displacing the binding. In other words, other drugs, other chemicals, other disease, inflammatory agents, and whatever. Now, thyroid peroxidase is the enzyme that is most involved in converting T4 to T3, and there's a gene that controls its production. But the interesting thing, in terms of disrupting thyroid peroxidase, I think I said at the beginning, is that soy, and particularly extracts of soy mm-hmm. isoflavones, are very, very involved in disrupting the ability of thyroid peroxidase to make this conversion, as would be cruciferous vegetables, for example, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, kale, rutabaga, that kind of stuff. They can definitely do that.
Huh.
Now, as far as the conversion of T4 and T3 is concerned, about 80% of that actually occurs in the liver, even though the enzyme comes from the thyroid gland. So the remaining 20% takes place in the kidneys, the spleen, the muscles, the skin, and even the central nervous system directly. So that tells us immediately if there's something wrong with the liver, you're going to have a major problem with deiodination and the ability of T3 to be produced to help the tissues. And also, in a minor sense, if there's anything wrong with the kidney, spleen, muscle, skin, or central nervous system, you're going to have a change in the availability of T3 and therefore the availability to the tissues of the metabolic regulators for all the functions of those tissues.
Right. It's like one thing gets thrown off and everything
right.
gets affected.
Right.
Which is
but the liver is very important
yeah.
because of its major role.
Okay. And so you're talking about the importance of, so we've, in the first segment, we were talking about the thyroid gland, its role in the body, how the hormones sort of behave and how they need to be in a certain form in order to really work. Otherwise, they're just there. And like you refer to it as like a reserve. So they're there, they're ready, but they're not going to do anything until they're called upon, so to speak.
That's correct.
Okay.
By the way, iodine is a critical thing here. I haven't mentioned. I think everybody knows that we have iodized salt because
yeah.
of in areas of the country and the world, there's not enough iodine. Iodine deficiency promotes hypothyroidism, but iodine excess promotes hyperthyroidism in cats and thyroid autoantibody production in dogs. Huh. So there's many, many trace nutrients that we need in the body for normal thyroid function, even manganese, for example, and zinc. And if we overdo it, we're doing the opposite of what we intend. So we have to be very careful here. In New Zealand, as a country, the soil is selenium deficient. So when they're feeding farm animals or domestic animals or companion animals, they've got to be careful with the amount of selenium that's in the food.
Very, very interesting. Now, this is the, and you have a book coming out next year talking about nutrition and nutrigenomics. So basically functional foods for different individuals. Can't wait for that one.
Good.
Okay. So what is the, so we've been talking about the thyroid gland, the function, and the hormones. And so what are the, okay, so you're, this is, the title of the book is The Canine Thyroid Epidemic. So we're saying there's a large percentage of the population that, of dogs, who are hypothyroid and are going untreated, either because they're just not being tested for it or because they are being tested for it, but the test itself or the reading of the results is insufficient. So what are some of the main sort of characteristic symptoms of hypothyroid? If someone is like, oh, I have a dog that has some challenges, whether it be behavioral or health, you know, physically, what are some of the main ones that you see sort of like, oh, every time? Like if I was like, I have a dog that's this, this, and this, you would be like, test its thyroid.
Okay. The first thing to say, Julia, it's very important because most veterinarians do not do that. It isn't until 70% or more of the thyroid gland has been damaged that you see the classical signs that they've been taught to look for, which would be fat, lazy, bad hair coat, hate the cold. You have to go from zero, full function, to 70% before you see the fat, lazy, bad hair coat, hates the cold. In between, and that can take a year and a half to 2 years once this process has started. They don't wake up overnight and become hypothyroid.
Right.
So the progression between health and thyroid dysfunction is gradual, and the first things you'll often see are behavioral, and they can be subtle. They can also be signs that are not required for life. In other words, as the thyroid starts to be damaged, the things that go first you can live without. For example, scenting, hearing, that kind of stuff. Gastrointestinal disease, inflammatory bowel disease, or leaky gut. Everybody says, oh, well, that's a food allergy. It probably isn't. It might be a food sensitivity or intolerance, which is what our second book is going to address.
Right. But that's a whole other book.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Much of it is promoted by thyroid dysfunction because thyroid dysfunction controls the white blood cells that deal with inflammation and detoxification in the body. So you can have behavioral primes. You can have easy weight gain. Honestly, I don't feed my dog too much, Dr. Smith. Well, Dr. Smith doesn't believe it because they know the dog's getting pizza and spaghetti and whatever. And we've even had people guilelessly say, well, my dog won't eat, well, except for human food. Well, that doesn't count. So often it's idiopathic obesity, and it can be just subtle weight gain that then becomes, you know, within 10 months, 10 or 12 pounds more than what the dog used to weigh. And they're usually 2 to 5 years of age. So that would be typical. Chronic ears, chronic urinary tract infections, chronic feet, yeasty, hot spots, flyaway coat, sticky uppy coat, dental tartar, things that just aren't right. And then eventually, before you get the classical end stage signs, is you'll see a sad, tragic expression. The animals have lethargy, they're blah, they've got tension fatigue, they just feel terrible. And some of them are irritable, and they'll attack other dogs in the household or people even. I'm provoked because they're saying, leave me alone. I feel terrible. Why don't you find out what's wrong with me?
Right.
Yep.
Gosh, it's just like, I mean, my work here is in training and behavior, and I see, I'm always looking at, I mean, the more that I do this work, the more I learn about health and, you know, the science behind, you know, all of these things, the impact of food. I mean, I've been on the pet food industry for 10 years now. You know, just sort of learning about it. And the more I learn about it, the more maddened I get. But
so what, But, Julie, why did this epidemic happen? Because we've had the genetic predisposition. The animals have been linebred and inbred to fixed type for years. Mm-hmm. And everything was fine until we screwed up our environment. We depleted the ozone layer. We use too many crop sprays. We over-vaccinate. We give drugs at the drop of a hat. We feed foods that aren't balanced because they're marketed by the huge pet food industry, some of which is excellent, some of which could be problematic, mm-hmm. as we all know. And
yeah.
so... And then when the pet goes to the veterinarian and the owner says, or companion caregiver says, my dog isn't right, like ADR ain't doing right, when they go into the office, they're not behaving normally because they're uptight and they don't look the same way as they do at home.
Right.
And people foolishly, like we do when we go to see the doctor, is they gave the dog a bath, you know, just so that it looked okay.
Right.
And that might not tell you what the odor of the dog's tissues are, what the skin and hair coat really are like. I mean, you don't bring it in filthy, but you don't just bathe it the day before.
Right. Well, and then even once there, oftentimes it's the, you know, the answer is prescription diets and stuff like that.
Exactly.
So, yeah. So you said, I had just a couple questions just to back up a little bit. Now, you said this could be... Because this is a genetic, this has a very, very strong genetic tie.
Mm-hmm.
But you also said that it doesn't just occur in purebred dogs, that
right.
you're seeing this in mixed breeds as well. Is it more so purebred dogs, or is it just everybody now?
You know, we can't answer that question. The purebred dog people say no. The mixed breed dog people say yes. The thing is, you can only look at the statistics of the dogs that you see in a clinic to get the blood out of.
Right.
So you might argue that some people, certainly in rural areas on farms and stuff, have dogs of mixed breeding or maybe, you know, herding or whatever.
Right.
They don't do the kinds of testing that's needed because the animals seem healthy, so they don't do it. In our statistics that we've shown for behavioral, for example, with Dr. Dodman at Tufts, we would say 2/3 of the animals are purebred and the rest are mixed.
Okay.
Now, that doesn't really tell us, but we can only look at the database.
Sure.
I would say it's most likely purebreds and hybrid breeds, like the Golden Doodles and Labradoodles and Schnoodles. And
but not like the Heinz 57s. Not as
and
much like...
And the breed du jour.
Right.
We have designer breed du jours that become popular too quickly, and they're bred when they shouldn't be, and we have all kinds of problems with that, as we do with the animals that win Best in Show at Westminster. All of a sudden, everybody wants a boxer, you know,
which is
the boxer breed has been in bad shape because of that, and it's not the fault of the people that have the excellent boxers.
Right. And that's, historically, anytime a breed becomes popular, it just is the downfall of, like Cocker Spaniels when Lady and the Tramp came out. You know, that was like sent them.
You mean Dalmatians?
Or Dalmatians,
And Dalmatians as well.
Yep.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So, okay, so it's not just purebred dogs. It's probably educated guess to say, not really guess, but to say purebred dogs and then like half and half mixed breeds are probably more prone to it than a dog that's like, you know.
Yeah, I would say 2/3, and the 2/3 would include the hybrid breeds, and then the other 1/3 are going to be mixed breeds. But some of them you can identify the mix. I mean, we know what they are.
Right. Okay. And then you also said 2 to 5 years of age. So,
right.
So this isn't, when I was first learning how to train 10 years ago, I was fortunately taught about a lot of medical conditions that can impact behavior, thyroid being one of them. And back then I was taught it was more so 5 years and older that you start to see this.
Yes, we actually see thyroiditis around puberty. The youngest case we ever had was a golden retriever at 7 months.
Wow.
When the animals are entering puberty because of the sex hormonal change, if they're not already spayed or neutered, you're affecting these three controlling organs, right? The pituitary, the thyroid, and the hypothalamus.
Yeah.
So we can see that. And so many young dogs, even before two, have the early thyroiditis forms, but the typical hypothyroidism, you know, the 70% or more damaged, would be 2 to 5 these days. It's definitely younger than it's been for a long time.
Okay. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a few minutes talking more with Dr. Gene Dodds, co-author of The Canine Thyroid Epidemic. You're listening to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes on Alternative Talk 1150.
Thyroid, I love you, I really do. motility, GI motility too. You make me grow and you help my mood, and you also help metabolize my food.
Specializing in spinal decompression, chiropractic, and physiotherapy, Dr. Justin Favreau and his team uses integrative, evidence-based treatments to provide his patients with comprehensive care that works with the body as a whole connected system. Director of the Advanced Rehabilitation and Wellness Center, Dr. Favreau would love to find a solution for your symptoms of pain, numbness, and tingling, headaches, allergies, fatigue, and general malaise. Contact Dr. Favreau at 206-497-4962 or go to advancedrehabandwellness.com. That's advancedrehabandwellness.com. Kamley Electric Incorporated is a full-service electrical contractor. From simple home repairs to full remodels, new construction, and small commercial projects, our qualified electricians do it all. We pride ourselves on our workmanship and professional standards, delivered with value in mind. Located in historic Ballard, Kamley Electric serves the greater Seattle metropolitan area. Licensed, bonded, and insured. Kamley Electric welcomes all inquiries about your electrical needs. Visit the website KemleyElectric.com. That's K-E-M-L-Y Electric.com. Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair discusses issues that are important to you, like good health and well-being, finding a new job and building your business, overcoming life's big challenges and making sense out of chaos, and living with passion and joy. Join us Mondays at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for show schedule and guest information.
This is Julie Forbes, dog training, behavior, and nutrition specialist and owner of Sensitive Dog, thoughtful guidance for you and your dog. If your dog needs basic obedience training, a behavior evaluation, or food consultation, I can help you. Call me at 206-372-7399 or visit my website, www.sensitivedog.com. I teach group obedience classes, in-home lessons, and evaluations, and a two-week intensive training program called Higher Education. Again, I'm Julie Forbes, Seattle's dog behavior training and nutrition specialist. www.sensitivedog.com.
Tell your friends, the place to be is Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
I can chew 500 micrograms of iodine, but only 75 will do. But in color, you store the rest, and that's why I love you. You then make hormones need 3 and 4. The 4's less potent, so you make more. Thus, you often iodide using peri-up-to-date, which couples with tyrosine in amazing ways. Thyroid, I love you.
Welcome back to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes. This is radio, so you can't see me shaking my fist at Eric right now. He found a thyroid song, so now that's I owe him some salmon treats for his cat, which I am happy to provide because I know they love them.
Yes, they do. Yes.
Well done, Eric. You have avoided defeat once again. We'll get you someday.
Someday.
Maybe Dr. Dodd's book on nutrigenomics will get you.
That's a tough one. I don't know that there's any nutrigenomics songs.
Yeah, well,
there.
I doubt it.
No,
not yet. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, Eric, you're a musician, so you know you could come up with one within the next year.
I could do it.
Yeah. All right. We're back with Dr. Jean Dodds talking about her book, The Canine Thyroid Epidemic, talking about hypothyroidism and autoimmune thyroiditis and all that good stuff. And it's such important information. There's so much to know. And unfortunately, this is something that really is that you are really bringing out into sort of the conversation in the industry, because it's not something that most people can go to their vet, and their regular vet is not going to know about the information that's in this book. So if you've missed any part of this show or any of our other episodes, you can find them all archived online at our website, dogradioshow.com. Just go to the podcast page and it'll be the top on the list because it'll be the most recent one as we are live today. And you can also find all of our past shows too. You can scroll down. And I do recommend, you know, listening to them all, of course, but especially finding Dr. Dodd's first interview here on The Dog Show which was back in March of 2011. It's number 109, episode number 109, talking about rabies vaccinosis, another extremely important topic for every dog owner to be educated about. So we've been talking about the thyroid gland, its role in the body, T3, T4, the testing, and, you know, common symptoms. So, Dr. Dodds, will you run that list again of common symptoms? Because this is a place where people can really, you know, as people are just listening to this interview and then, oh, my gosh, my dog, you know, my dog has three or four of those. And that might, that's really what will have people connect to what we're talking about, is if they see it in their own dog.
Correct. And I give seminars all the time. I gave one in Phoenix this last weekend when it was 115. Most of the people there were just aghast when they saw all the examples of photographs of lesions that they've assumed were something else.
Right.
So the first thing that can happen when it starts is a behavioral change. The animal will not immediately change, but it can be erratic. In other words, a perfectly sociable animal one day doesn't want to be messed with or is irritable or just seems blah and doesn't have a sparkle in its eye and doesn't interact. And then they can start reacting adversely to people they know that come to the home, barking incessantly, hiding, like, I don't want to see this person. I don't know who it is. And we're not talking about old animals that have illnesses that make them unable to see. We're talking about young animals.
Yeah.
Then it can progress to something subtle like chronic ear infections or chronic foot infections or chronic urinary tract infections. How many times? My dog has had four urinary tract infections recently. They all resolve with antibiotic. But there's something metabolically wrong with the body that allows these infections to keep coming back.
Yeah.
You can have hot spots. You can have sticky, uppy hair coat. You can have dry seborrhea, like flaky, dry skin that's very itchy along the top line, especially the tail head, under the arms, in the groins. You can have slight pigment changes, almost like tiny brown circular spots that appear not raised, but within the skin, a discoloration. You can have oily skin. You know, you have to bathe the animal more often. Mm-hmm. And then eventually you'll get fat, lazy, hair comes out, you know, rat tail, patchy hair loss on both sides, and then, overweight. And so the weight gain can be subtle. It can be, if you're a middle-aged Labrador, you can have idiopathic obesity, which is normal for them. But many Labradors that are middle-aged are also hypothyroid, so you have to determine whether that's the cause.
Mm-hmm.
And the weight creeps up, just like it does in us, but these are not old dogs.
Mm-hmm.
They're not being overfed.
Okay. So why should somebody not go say, oh, I think I want to get my dog's thyroid tested? And then they go to their vet and say, test my dog's thyroid. Why is that not the best way to go about the testing?
Well, it is a good thing to do. But first of all, some veterinarians will make a physical examination, say there's nothing wrong with the dog except you're feeding it too much. Or you've got a hot spot and, you know, here, take this antibiotic or take this steroid shot and it'll go away.
Mm-hmm.
If they insist that they do a wellness profile, they'll typically just do a T4, a total T4, which is a package that most of the commercial labs offer as a special discounted, you know, wellness price. And then if the T4 is low, they'll recommend adding on one more test. You just do hunt and peck. That does not diagnose anything properly.
Mm-hmm.
We just had a lady who breeds excellent purebred Basenjis, some of which are African bloodlines, and she drove all the way 2 hours and 45 minutes to come here because she downloaded the test request forms from Hemopet. She asked her local veterinarian, whom I know, to please draw the sample so she can send it to us for the testing, and they refused.
Yeah.
They said, our laboratory does these tests. We don't need that autoantibody test.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she's not going to breed them without the autoantibody test because she's doing the right thing.
Right.
And she's doing genetic screening for the Fanconi syndrome that Basenjis have.
Yeah.
And she just got in the car and drove down here. She said, I'm not going to argue with them anymore. And she went to two veterinarians, both of whom I know.
Yeah.
Not criticizing them. They don't understand.
Yeah. Now, I had an experience with a client of mine, not quite as bad as that, but where I got called and sort of questioned and pressured into sending, I mean, the dog was getting its thyroid test because of me and because I told her to do it because
right.
he had so many symptoms. And I had to basically stand up to this vet who was trying to pressure her to send it to another lab because that was the gold standard and had been for years. And I was just like, no, send it to this one.
That gold standard lab, by the way, has been doing it just as long as we have. So we are an equally gold standard lab, and we're the only ones that do breed and age-specific interpretive comments. So why would you think a Yorkie has the metabolism of a Newfie, for example?
Right.
They don't. So obviously the metabolic needs of a Yorkie are much higher because they eat more calories to sustain them. They're much more active little dogs than a Newfie, and you wouldn't want a Newfie with the energy of a Yorkie. You'd be in big trouble.
No, you don't. You would not.
So obviously why, and there's nothing wrong with that other gold standard laboratory and how they do the test. They do it very well. But what ends up happening is the client then has to send it to me to have me interpret it because they have to overrule their local veterinarian who was told by that lab it was within the large reference range. Okay. So I end up being put in the middle saying, no, this is what it should breed for whatever breed and age, and this is what we recommend and whatever. And sometimes, well, most of the times, the veterinarians will concur, but sometimes they won't. And so the client has to go to another veterinarian.
Yeah.
It's silly.
Why the resistance?
I don't know. I think maybe some people have never heard of me after 50 years. That seems odd. Other times they say, well, we have a special contract with the lab we use. We have to use them. And that's not the gold standard lab because they're nonprofit. They don't have contracts. They have volume discounts. So if many people said, I don't want the thyroids to go to the lab, your commercial lab, I want it to go to Dr. Dodds, they're going to lose their volume and lose their discount, which, by the way, is not usually passed on to the client.
Right.
As you can understand, I mean, I'm not criticizing the way veterinarians have to survive today because the economy is terrible for us, too.
Yeah.
But still, that's the reason. And so you walk away, you find a holistic veterinarian. Usually what I end up doing is telling the people to go on the Holistic Association, AHVMA.org. Go find a veterinarian, scroll down on your state, and it lists all the veterinarians that happen to be members. There are others, of course, that are appropriate that are not members. And then pick one of those because they're not going to argue with them.
Right. And this is not something currently that's being taught. This information in your book is not being passed on to vet students at this point.
No, it's not, unfortunately. And most graduates don't have it. And even some veterinary endocrinologists that are experts in other areas of endocrinology are not up to date. And it's very frustrating. I mean, I have a colleague in Long Island who's an outstanding endocrinologist. That's two colleagues, actually, one in New York City, one in Long Island, that are trying to teach all their CE about doing it properly. And interesting enough, on the Veterinary Internal Medicine listserv recently, which I'm not a member of that club, the head of internal medicine at a major veterinary teaching hospital said, I only trust Hemopet for my thyroid interpretations. Nobody else can do it appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got a huge amount of kudos from people that are members that told me about this.
Mm-hmm.
So they're trying to break into it, as is the gold standard lab.
Mm-hmm.
And the larger commercial labs are threatened by this because it takes away a significant amount of their cachet, not necessarily their bottom line income.
Right. Right.
You know, they're in business.
It's tough to break into. Yep. Yeah.
That's their job.
And it's big business.
Yeah.
All right. It's already time for our next break. We'll be back in just a few minutes talking more with Dr. Jean Dodds about her book, The Canine Thyroid Epidemic. Stay tuned to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes on Alternative Talk 1150. This is Julie Forbes, your host of The Dog Show. If you've been listening, you already know how I feel about Invisible Fence Northwest and their safety solutions for dogs. But get this, they help cats too. They tell me they've helped thousands of felines enjoy safe freedom outdoors or can keep them safe inside. They also have gentle ways to create a dog-free zone for your cat, so your dog will stay away from your cat's litter box and food bowls. Visit InvisibleFenceNW.com or call 800-800-FENCE and tell them you want the Dog Show discount. Invisible Fence, for the life of your pet.
Do you have legal questions? Need to know where to turn?
Hi, this is Rick Gregrick, your host of Northwest Legal Compass.
Northwest Legal Compass will address your questions on a variety of legal topics, including estate planning, asset protection, real estate and business planning, and more. The legal and accounting staff of Gregrick & Associates are dedicated to providing you with superior legal and tax services. Their integrated counsel is geared to the achievement of your goals.
Visit us on the web at rjglegal.com.
Be sure and tune in every Friday at noon here on Alternative Talk
Talk 1150.
Who is Jopra?
What is Jopra?
When is Jopra?
Joe Janot is the host of a brand new show called Jopra. Joe has been nicknamed Jopra by his friends and colleagues who find his advice and insight to be enlightening, just like a certain other talk show host of world renown. Born and raised in Seattle, independent-minded Joe Janot is bringing issues to the airwaves that make you ponder, laugh, and deliberate. The Jopra Show is about the ins and outs of food and drink, relationships, entertainment, and so much more. Get to know Jopra every Thursday at 2, right here on Alternative Talk 1150.
This is Julie Forbes, dog training, behavior, and nutrition specialist, and owner of Sensitive Dog, thoughtful guidance for you and your dog. If your dog needs basic obedience training, a behavior evaluation, or food consultation, I can help you. Call me at 206-372-7399 or visit my website, www.sensitivedog.com. I teach group obedience classes, in-home lessons, and evaluations, and a two-week intensive training program called Higher Education. Again, I'm Julie Forbes, Seattle's dog behavior training and nutrition specialist, www.sensitivedog.com.
Spread the word. You don't have to settle for the usual talk radio. Now there's Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
The dog days are over. The dog days are done. The horses are coming, so you better run.
Welcome back to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes. You're listening to Alternative Talk, 1150. We are back with Dr. Gene Dodds, co-author of The Canine Thyroid Epidemic. We've been talking about hypothyroidism in dogs and how common it is now and how much younger the dogs are now showing signs of this and how important it is to get this tested and how important it is to get it tested properly and to get the results read properly. You can find out all the information you need about how to get your dog's thyroid tested through Dr. Dodd's lab, Hemopet, by going to hemopet.org. And all of the information is on the website. It's very easy to do. And even my first time doing it, I felt a little bit intimidated because it's like blood. I'm supposed to send blood. Like, you know, I just didn't have the confidence of having done something before, but it really, you just do what they tell you to do. It's really that simple. And send it to the lab and you get your you overnight it and you get your confirmation that it's been received. I mean, all of the communication, Dr. Dodds, from your lab was very, very prompt, which was great. It was like, got your blood sample. And then usually it was within a day or two that we then got the results. So it's really a very fast process. It's not like you have to wait weeks for it. Hemopet.org is Dr. Dodd's website for all of that thyroid information and more.
Julie, just to interrupt for a sec,
yeah.
Sorry. The blood does not have, the serum, once it's separated, does not have to come overnight unless you're doing whole blood counts. It can take 10 days to come. So U.S. priority mail with a cold pack in this weather and a little paper padding is fine, and our results are always completed in 24 to 48 hours. We are the fastest with professional interpretation.
Yeah, you guys are very fast. So if it's just the serum?
Yes.
But if it's the blood and the serum?
Yeah, it can come two-day priority mail with a cold pack is okay, or overnight.
Okay.
Some people have overnight is so expensive, it's an issue, although our nonprofit prices mean it's much less costly than it would be to have your veterinarian send it to a commercial lab.
Yeah, it's very affordable for such a major blood test.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay, so that's hemopet.org. We've been talking about hypothyroidism in dogs, more common than you would think, and this is a very important topic. So if you're just tuning in, I highly recommend that you listen to this show and also my other interview with Dr. Dodds back in March of last year, number 109. You can find them archived on our website, dogradioshow.com, and you can also find us as a free download on iTunes as an audio podcast. Just search for The Dog Show with Julie Forbes and you'll find us. You can also find us on Facebook as well and Dr. Dodd's efforts on Facebook too. So this is, okay, you said, you mentioned something that I just wanted to ask, you know, the importance of the impact of food. And you have another book coming out about that. So I look forward to that conversation very much. Anyone who's listened to the show knows I talk about pet food all the time. You mentioned grain-free. And if it's, what if it is, because this struck me, because we're feeding this one dog that we had tested who came back normal. He's on a dehydrated food. It's a very, very, it's a great food, but it does have quinoa in it. And I'm wondering if I should really get him on a grain, total grain-free.
No, the dehydrated foods are excellent. Quinoa, millet, even barley. I mean, we have our NutriScan saliva test for food sensitivity and intolerance that has those foods on there. When we say grain-free, we really mean gluten-free, which would be no corn, no wheat, no soy.
Okay. Those ones that you want.
Some animals are reactant to oatmeal, for example, and they bathe the animal in oatmeal shampoo.
Right.
But you won't know that unless when you do a bath, the animal gets really itchy. You can sort of twig on that.
Huh.
And millet and quinoa are excellent sources of protein. You know, so would buckwheat, for example. You know,
okay.
Be different. You know,
okay.
Buckwheat is not wheat.
Right. So it is those three that people really should stay away from anyway, corn, wheat, and soy.
Yeah, I should have said gluten-free, excuse me. But we always use this term grain-free when it really isn't that.
Okay. Okay, good. Okay, so thyroid, now let's see. So they're in your book. The book is just... this is all so fascinating. I have a degree in animal science from the University of Vermont, so this is bringing me back to all of my nutrition and chemistry classes, learning about this level. I mean, learning about physiology on this level. It is just amazing how complex it is. It says in your book, the book is called The Canine Thyroid Epidemic, if you're wanting to really get solidly educated on this as a professional in the industry or as an owner, as a dog owner. I highly recommend reading this book, The Canine Thyroid Epidemic, Dr. Gene Dodds. You list the breeds that there do seem to be some breeds that are more prone to this.
Mm-hmm.
And you say that the English Setter is number one, 43%.
Right.
What are some of the other breeds that very commonly have thyroid issues?
You mean thyroiditis? Cockers, Goldens, Shelties, Maltese, Gordon Setters, Irish Setters, even Pit Bulls, Beagles, Dachshunds. Oh, I can go on and on. A lot of the Sighthound breeds, of course, Greyhounds, Spinoni Italianos, Alaskan Klee-Kai. Nova Scotia duck tolling retrievers. Just trying to think.
Giant Schnauzer.
Giant Schnauzer, English Springer Spaniel. I mean, you could go on and on and on. There's a top 100 list, and the numbers, the ranking changes a little bit from, you know, quarter to quarter and whatever. But English Setters have the distinction of being number one forever, which is really horrific because I used to raise them.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, sheep dogs.
French Bulldogs are coming up. Boxers are a mess right now.
Yeah.
Really are.
It's just so sad to see that, you know, just from the breeding. I mean, the dog just doesn't have a fair shot. I mean, you know, and like you said earlier in the interview, this is a 90% of these cases are genetically inherited autoimmune conditions. So, and then we go and add insult to injury with all of the environmental toxins, the food, the big brand pet food, over vaccination, which is another interview that we did a while ago on rabies vaccinosis, which we have unfortunately had direct experience with. By the way, Dr. Dodds, Remy, the German Shepherd who you helped us with, is doing very, very well now.
Oh, thank God.
She's a little, she almost acts autistic. Mm-hmm. Like she's definitely mentally changed.
Mm-hmm.
But she's health-wise very robust. It was a long road, but I don't know that we would have been able to pull her out of that without your guidance. So,
oh, great.
Yeah, she's doing real well. She's lives.
Yeah, I forgot Irish Water Spaniel. I mean, I could go on and on. German Shepherds, I can go on and on with the list.
Yeah. Do you have a sense for what percentage of dogs in general have hypothyroidism?
I would say it's probably 40% across the board.
Really?
Yeah, it's very high. Mm. I mean, I didn't even mention Basenji's. You know, I got an English, American Cocker Spaniel, Party Color, came to me 4 years of age. They've spent $2,000. The dog has the most gorgeous coat and skin, drop dead beautiful ears and everything, whatever. But she's idiopathically fat, and she should be 18 pounds, and she's 24 pounds.
Uh-huh.
Nobody did a complete thyroid profile.
Wow.
They did a T4. We did it. Her thyroglobulin autoantibody was 221 when it should be less than 10.
Wow. Poor thing. Poor thing.
Yeah, yeah. So, but we solved the problem. Only with, if that, it could have been done 2 years ago.
Yeah. Yep. And there's a lot of dogs that never get the test or, you know, that never get to that point, never get the help that they need.
No veterinarian, 99.9% of veterinarians seeing that dog would think she had a thyroid problem.
Right. Yeah.
By looking at her.
Yeah. Well, we are out of time. Time always flies on the show, especially when talking with Dr. Dodds. I just think you're so brilliant, and I think that the work that you're doing is so important, and I thank you for that.
Thank you.
Her book is The Canine Thyroid Epidemic. I can't wait for your new book next year, Nutrigenomics, talking about food, one of my favorite topics. Dr. Dodds' website is hemopet.org. Be sure to check it out. And thanks for listening to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes on Alternative Talk 1150.